Shiite and Sunni militias began killing each other. According to The Lancet, a respected medical journal, 600,000 civilians were killed. That's when the Americans conceived of the idea of building walls around the most violent areas. They would contain the insurrection and separate the Sunnis from the Shiites. Baghdad would resemble Berlin during the time of the wall. The US Army spokesman, however, confirms they are also building gated housing, like the retired people's homes in California.
We're building different walls all throughout the city here, different communities, and you've heard the concept of gated communities.
Mm-hmm. Funny, a gated community, to me, just connotes, you know, an exclusive sort of Coral Gables, Florida kind of setup, which is not what you mean, is it?
The gated communities are designed to protect the population in selected neighborhoods throughout Baghdad.
Many of them don't like it at all. They feel that it will further divide the city on sectarian lines.
Well, the intent is not to divide the city on sectarian lines. Once again, the intent is to provide a more secure neighborhood for the people that live in selected neighborhoods. And if we find areas that we think that the gated communities will do good and will control the population, we will probably build more.
Each zone is surrounded by a wall. It's like living on a reserve. We're stuck inside. The wall was the Americans' idea. It was American material and vehicles that were used to build it. There never was the split between Sunnis and Shiites before the Americans arrived. Sunnis, Shiites, Christians and Jews, we were all Iraqis first. And the first thing the Americans ask you now is, are you Shiite or Sunni?
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Compared with earlier variants, Omicron may cause less damage to the lungs, new animal research has suggested. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Carl Zimmer and Azim Qureshi. The piece is titled, "Studies Suggest Why Omicron is Less Severe. It Spares the Lungs." A spate of new studies on laboratory animals and human tissues are providing the first indication of why the Omicron variant, cause as mild a disease than previous versions of the coronavirus. In studies on mice and hamsters, Omicron produced less damaging infections, often limited largely to the upper airway, the nose, throat, and windpipe. The variant did much less damage to the lungs, where previous variants would often cause scarring and serious breathing difficulty. It's fair to say that the idea of a disease that manifests itself primarily in the upper respiratory system is emerging, said Roland Ailes, a computational biologist at the Berlin Institute of Health in Germany, who has studied how coronaviruses infect the airway. In November, when the first report on the Omicron variant came out of South Africa, scientists could only guess at how it might behave differently from earlier forms of the virus. All they knew was that it had a distinctive and alarming combination of more than 50 genetic mutations. Previous research had shown that some of these mutations enabled coronaviruses to grab onto cells more tightly. Others allowed the virus to evade antibodies, which serve as an early line of defense against infection. But how the new variant might behave inside of the human body was a mystery. You can't predict the behavior of virus from just the mutation, said Ravindra Gupta, a virologist at the University of Cambridge. Over the past month, more than a dozen research groups, including Dr. Gupta's, have been observing the new pathogen in the laboratory, infecting cells in petri dishes with Omicron and spraying the virus into the noses of animals. As they worked, Omicron surged across the planet, readily infecting even people who were vaccinated or had recovered from earlier infections. But as cases skyrocketed, hospitalizations increased only modestly. Early studies of patients suggested that the Omicron variant was less likely to cause severe illness than other variants, especially in vaccinated people. Still, those findings came with a lot of caveats. For one thing, the bulk of early Omicron infections were in young people, who are less likely to get seriously ill with all versions of the coronavirus. And many of those early cases were happening in people with some immunity from previous infections or vaccines. It was unclear whether Omicron would also prove less severe in an unvaccinated older person, for example. Experiments on animals can help clear up these ambiguities because scientists can test Omicron on identical animals living in identical conditions. More than half a dozen experiments made public in recent days all pointed to the same conclusion. The Omicron variant is milder than the Delta variant and other earlier versions of the virus. On Wednesday, 29th of December, a large consortium of Japanese and American scientists released a report on hamsters and mice that had been infected with either Omicron or one of several earlier variants of the virus. Those infected with Omicron had less lung damage, lost less weight, and were less likely to die, the study found. Although the animals infected with Omicron on average experienced much milder symptoms, the scientists were particularly struck by the results in Syrian hamsters, a species known to get severely ill with all previous versions of the coronavirus. This was surprising, since every other variant has robustly infected these hamsters, said Dr. Michael Diamond, a virologist at Washington University and a co-author of the study. Several other studies on mice and hamsters have reached the same conclusion. Like most urgent Omicron research, these studies have been posted online but have not yet been published in scientific journals. The reason that Omicron variant is milder may be a matter of anatomy. Dr. Michael Diamond and his colleagues found that the level of Omicron in the noses of hamsters was the same as in animals infected with an earlier form of the coronavirus, but Omicron levels in the lungs were one-tenth or even less of the level of other variants. A similar finding came from researchers at the University of Hong Kong, who studied bits of tissue taken from human airways during surgery. In 12 lung samples, the researchers found that the Omicron variant grew more slowly than the Delta variant and other variants did. The researchers also infected tissue from the bronchi, the tubes in the upper chest that deliver air from the windpipe to the lungs. And inside of those bronchial cells, in the first 2 days after an infection, Omicron grew faster than Delta or the original coronavirus did. These findings will have to be followed up with further studies, such as experiments with monkeys or examination of the airways of people infected with Omicron. If the results hold up to scrutiny, they might explain why people infected with Omicron seem less likely to be hospitalized than those infected with the Delta variant. Coronavirus infections start in the nose or possibly the mouth and spread down to the throat. Mild infections don't get much further than that, but when the coronavirus reaches the lungs, it can do serious damage. Immune cells in the lungs can overreact, killing off not just infected cells but also uninfected ones. They can produce runaway inflammation, scarring the lungs' delicate walls. What's more, the viruses can escape from the damaged lungs into the bloodstream, triggering blood clots and ravaging other organs. Dr. Gupta suspects that his team's new data give a molecular explanation for why the Omicron variant doesn't fare so well in the lungs. Many cells in the lung carry a protein called TMPRSS2 on their surface that can inadvertently help passing viruses gain entry to the cell. But Dr. Gupta's team found that this protein doesn't grab onto the Omicron very well. As a result, Omicron does a worse job of infecting cells in this manner than the Delta variant does. A team at the University of Glasgow independently came to the same conclusion. Through an alternative route, coronaviruses can also slip into cells that don't make TMPRSS2. Higher in the airway, cells tend not to carry the protein, which might explain the evidence that Omicron is found there more often than in the lungs. Dr. Gupta speculated that Omicron evolved into an upper airway specialist, thriving in the throat and the nose. If it's true, the virus might have a better chance of getting expelled in tiny drops into the surrounding air and encountering new hosts. It's all about what happens in the upper airway for it to transmit, he said. It's not really what happens down below in the lungs, where the severe disease stuff happens. So you can understand why the virus has evolved in this way. While these studies clearly help explain why Omicron causes milder disease, they don't yet answer why the variant is so good at spreading from one person to another. The United States logged more than 580,000 cases on Thursday, 30th of December alone, the majority of which are thought to be Omicron. These studies address the question about what may happen in the lungs but don't really address the question of transmissibility, said Sarah Cherry, a virologist at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Pennsylvania in the United States. Dr. Michael Diamond said he wanted to wait for more studies to be carried out, especially in people instead of animals, before endorsing the hypothesis that the protein, TMPRSS2, is the key to understanding Omicron. I think it is still premature on this, he said. Scientists know that part of Omicron's contagiousness comes from its ability to evade antibodies, allowing it to easily get into cells of vaccinated people far more easily than other variants of the virus. but they suspect that Omicron has some other biological advantages as well. Last week, researchers reported that the variant carries a mutation that may weaken so-called innate immunity, a molecular alarm that rapidly activates our immune system at the first sign of an invasion in the nose. But it will take more experiments to see if this is indeed one of Omicron's secrets to success. It could be as simple as, this is a lot more virus in people's saliva and nasal passages, Dr. Cherry said. But there could be other explanations for its efficient spreading. It could be more stable in the air or better infect new hosts. I think it's really an important question, Dr. Cherry said.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Africa witnessed another year that was eventful and full of challenges. The continent saw a return of coups and increased political instability. People in the continent are also resisting Western neocolonial powers as they seek to assert their freedom. There was also renewed hope in economic progress and technological advancement. The COVID-19 pandemic dominated the headlines throughout Africa in the year, and as the year ended, a new variant, Omicron, was detected in Southern Africa. Now, addressing the UN General Assembly in September, South African President had warned that vaccine apartheid imposed by Western countries would lead to mutations of the virus.
It is an indictment on humanity that more than 82% of the world's vaccine doses have been acquired by wealthy countries, while less than 1% has gone to low-income countries. Unless we address this as a matter of urgency, the pandemic will last much longer and new mutations of the virus will emerge and spread.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative view of events making headlines in Africa. Today we are focusing on some of the events that made headlines in Africa in 2021. So stay tuned as we discuss with our experts.
COVID-19 vaccine apartheid. Africa is ending another challenging year. The COVID-19 pandemic continued to spread amid discovery of new variants. Vaccine deliveries to the continent have been erratic, causing delays in vaccination drives as calls intensified for equity. Meanwhile, many vaccines donated by Western countries have been of no help as many were delivered or literally dumped in Africa while they were about to expire. The World Health Organization Director General has lamented that the world has reached a situation of vaccine apartheid.
The world is in vaccine apartheid. As you know, high-income countries account for 15% of the world's population, but have 45% of the world's vaccines. Even now, some high-income countries are moving to vaccinate children and adolescents, while health workers, older people, and other at-risk groups around the world remain unvaccinated. The consequences are clear to see. Cases and deaths from COVID-19 globally remain at or near record highs, and new variants threaten to unravel the gains we have made. The big problem is a lack of sharing. So the solution is more sharing.
Now, for more on some of the events that made headlines in Africa, my colleague contacted Lloyd Msipa, director, Africa Brief Foundation, and Joseph Ucheno, writer and African affairs analyst. Now, we first asked Mr. Mtipa how the vaccine apartheid imposed by major Western pharmaceuticals impacted on efforts to vaccinate people in Africa.
Well, to begin with, this whole coronavirus epidemic caught a lot of African countries flat-footed, in the sense that half the time, if the leaders got sick or those with money got sick, they would leave the country and go somewhere else. But then this COVID thing has been universal, in the sense that it affected each and every country, forcing African countries to look internally into their own health systems. But then again, you find that those who control the copyright of these medicines, the vaccines, are Western countries, and they've not and they've refused to release them to African countries, which, by the way, have the capacity to manufacture their own vaccines, but that's just they don't have the legal standing. So because of this, you know, Africans are pretty much in trouble. They have to rely on the West to sell them these medicines. And you know what the West has done? They've pretty much bought the medicines enough for themselves, leaving the other African countries to suffer.
Now, amid the vaccine apartheid, Rwandan President Paul Kagame says Africa needs to start manufacturing its own vaccines and other pharmaceutical products.
In line with our agenda of increasing domestic health financing, it is important for Africa to forge strategic public-private partnerships for vaccine manufacturing on our continent.
Now, Ms. Ochino says apartheid perpetrated by Western countries has led to an awakening among African scientists.
It has been extremely frustrating for most of African countries. But I think also one of the things that this has shown is to wake up African scientists, industry and government, and indeed most of the African people who observe these issues, that indeed apartheid in Africa versus the West has not ended, and that it is real in economics, real in politics, and on this occasion, real in medicine. To the extent that many African countries, particularly the first wave, wanted to vaccinate, but they could not, in many cases, be able to get the vaccines, even those with money. It was extraordinary.
The most significant positive outcome of COVID-19 in the region has been the acceleration of innovation in Africa. An electronics manufacturing manager at an innovation lab in Nairobi that works on the surface mount technology for entrepreneurs and artisans says that such projects will create opportunity for growth.
We see ourselves as a factory of factories. So we'd be really, really, really happy if 10 years from now there are hundreds or even thousands of factories that have emanated from ideas that were crystallized in our space.
Do such projects in Kenya point to a reawakening amongst African scientists?
You know, I think there are two elements to that question. As I suggested in my first response to you, in a way, Africans have woken up. And indeed, in a way, Africans have woken up to the reality that they will not necessarily depend on Western or indeed any other technology for their own advancements and in many cases for their health and for the protection of their lives. So there is huge potential right now in African pharmaceutical industries, although it's very small, African research and sciences to be able to develop. And in fact, in many cases, huge innovations did take place. In my own native Uganda, there was a case for a medication that was never approved. But amazingly, as I understand it, you know, perhaps if it went to the global rigor, it might just about get improved. But thanks, unfortunately, to the massive amount of the monies that Western pharmaceuticals throw as part of the lobby monies, that may not see the end of the day. But on the other hand, I think actually, sadly, on the negative side, I don't know that in Africa we necessarily learn, because we don't learn very much. Because if we did, this would be a huge opportunity for governments to invest in research more, for governments to invest in research, for governments to encourage, to double incentives and bursaries to study sciences.
Sudan crisis.
Moving on to politics, Sudan has witnessed a tumultuous year and the future still looks uncertain. The country's military takeover on the 25th of October and the arrest of Prime Minister Hamdok triggered widespread protests and condemnation across the country.
Nearly 50 people have so far been killed and hundreds have been injured as a result of a clampdown by security forces. Even after a political agreement was signed in November, enabling Hamdok to be reinstated as Prime Minister, thousands of people continue to hold protests in the capital Khartoum and other cities to demand return to full civilian rule. A protester here says they have very clear demands.
All I'm saying is the revolution never actually ended. It's continuing and we will continue until we achieve all of our goals. We don't want the military to be the head of state anymore. We want civilian government. We want justice for all the wounded, all the martyred, our friends, brothers and sisters and sons. We want justice for all of them.
Ethiopian conflict.
The conflict in Ethiopia continued to dominate headlines across the year. The country's 13-month insurgency recently saw a dramatic turn following substantial advances by federal government forces against TPLF rebels from the northern Tigray region. And as the year ended, the Tigrayan rebels announced withdrawal from neighboring regions and a halt of their march towards the capital Addis Ababa.
Many Ethiopians have blamed Western countries, especially the United States, and their media outlets of supporting rebel groups in the country. Here is one Ethiopian slamming Washington's interference in his country during a protest outside the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria, South Africa.
Yes, it is very critical. It's an issue of the country. And we don't need America to interfere in Ethiopia's issue. Actually, we don't need any support. America must stay away. USA must stay away from the issue of Ethiopia. Because of them, we are suffering now. Our country is getting finished. People are dying and our economy is getting finished. Therefore, it's because of America. America must stop. America must...
Now we asked Ms. Msipa to tell us the possible objectives pursued by Western neocolonial powers fomenting turmoil in Ethiopia.
They desire control. So what they do is they fund the opposition, they fund rebel groups, and at the same time they offer them media space. It's unfortunate that Africa does not have its own 24-hour news outlet like the CNN, the BBCs of this world to counter this propaganda. So what then happens is that most of the news that are received worldwide and Ethiopia itself is news that is manufactured in America and manufactured in Britain and other Western countries in an attempt to destabilize a government that is elected in Ethiopia. So it's all about control. It's all about resources as well, because those rebel groups, for them to get that kind of support, it means they've made a commitment with regard to resource extraction, because that's all it is. Whenever a government takes a position and says our resources are worth so much, and if you're going to buy them, you pay so much, and the first world, America in particular, does not want to pay a lot of money for primary products. So they stabilize governments. They make sure that they overthrow governments, and one tool that is used to overthrow governments is the media.
Well, you are watching a special edition of Press TV's weekly Africa Today program. Today we are taking a glance at some of the events that made headlines in Africa over the past year. We now take a short break, and we still have much more in store for you. So stay with us.
Africa Year in Review 2021.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
resistance against French forces in West Africa.
Over the past 1 year, there has been rising anger in West Africa over continued French military presence. Now, recently, angry masses in Burkina Faso and Niger temporarily blocked a French military convoy heading to Mali. Here is one of the protesters in Burkina Faso.
France has to leave, together with its weapons. That's it. That's what we want. We don't need the French army. We don't need the French army.
Meanwhile, in an outrageous move, France praised its troops who killed civilians during one of the protests in Niger. Florence Parly, the French defense minister, said on claims that the country's army had carried out an internal investigation into the clashes during and three people lost their lives during one of its convoy patrols in Niger.
West Africans protesting against the presence of French troops accuse this European country of pursuing neo-colonialism in Africa under the pretext of combating terrorism in order to maintain its grip in the region. Now, Mr. Msipa says one of the reasons behind this resistance against French troops in this region is that the masses are now fed up with the plundering of their country's resources by Western countries.
We go back to a history of colonization, of which obviously from the 60s going forward, Africa in general started resisting any form of occupation. And you know that occupation comes attached with the resource extraction. So what the French have been doing is they've now tried to change that colonization and extraction in some sort of assimilation, you know, to make these countries feel like they're part of the empire. But Africans have seen beyond that. They are tired of being used by these countries.
Israeli regime rejected in Africa.
In 2021, the Israeli regime miserably failed in its attempt to join the African Union as an observer member. The African Union Executive Council has delayed a decision on granting the Israeli regime observer status in the Pan-African body until the AU summit in February 2022.
African Union Commission head Moussa Faki Mahamat decided to grant Israel observer status, prompting outrage across the African continent. South Africa is one of the countries that have come out openly to reject Israeli regime's attempt to infiltrate the African Union.
We believe this was not an acceptable decision. We are always worried when there's a rapprochement toward Israel, when there's no effort to build peace and to ensure that the people of Palestine enjoy very basic human rights. If the decision of Mr. Mohammed was based on a fact of an advance in the peace process, South Africa would be fully behind him. But when matters are as they are, when there's occupation, when there are deaths on a regular basis, when there's bombardment of the Palestinian territory, nobody can say this is an acceptable decision.
Decline of U.S. influence in Africa.
United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken visited Africa last November, where he witnessed the decline of his country's influence.
During Blinken's visit to Kenya, Nigeria, and Senegal, there were protests across the world against Washington's interference in Ethiopia. These Ethiopian anti-US demonstrators outside the US Embassy in Pretoria in South Africa are a reflection of the mood across Africa against Washington's imperialism.
America and US friends, stop supporting the terrorist group, and now it's time for Africa to unite and free Africa! Free, free, free!
What is the impact of the diminishing status of the US in Africa?
Well, the traditional way of colonization in Africa was through the use of force, through the use of guns. And that is what Western countries, how they got into Africa. And what they would do is they'll control the government or install their own leaders in African countries. And because they control these leaders, they're able to extract those resources and pay next to nothing for them. But then what has since happened, since the rise of nationalism in Africa, which, by the way, most of these nationalist parties in Africa have been funded by China. So China helps proper governments to come into authority in Africa. But when they come back, they don't come back using the gun. They come back with diplomacy, economic diplomacy, and offer the African countries assistance by way of loans, by way of infrastructural support, building bridges, and so on. So there is an exchange. Yes, it may not be an equal exchange, but China is coming diplomatically with economic assistance, most of these countries. We can talk about the impacts of these loans in Africa. That's a different discussion. But they are not coming using force like what America and other countries were doing. They are talking to these leaders, and they are offering something in return. Yes, the exchange may not necessarily be fair, but the approach is different. And because of that, we see a rise in Chinese influence in Africa.
France-Algeria tension.
Early October, the frosty relations between France and Algeria took a turn for the worse after Algiers recalled its ambassador to Paris. Now, this decision came following insulting remarks by French President Emmanuel Macron that disparage the history of Algeria and its state institutions. In an interview with Press TV, the Algerian foreign minister responded to the insulting remarks by Macron.
What was said about Algeria, Algeria had the opportunity to respond to it. We reject any interference in our domestic affairs. We don't accept value judgments on the formation of the Algerian nation. Algerian nation is an old one, deeply rooted in history, a nation that has contributed significantly to the prosperity in the region, the Mediterranean region, that has cooperated very, very efficiently and substantially with Europe, including France. Algeria has had diplomatic relations with France as well as with a number of other European nations. So we are at ease. All what relates to history, Algeria is a nation like any other nations, and therefore we don't think that it should be subject to any questioning or any debate.
Africa and climate change.
Finally, climate change is now a major issue impacting negatively on millions of people across Africa. Yet, the continent contributes least to global warming.
During the recent 2021 United Nations Climate Change Conference held in Glasgow, African leaders demanded climate justice. A 26-year-old climate and environmental activist from Kenya, Elizabeth Vatuti, addressed the conference and said sub-Saharan Africa is in danger.
I have seen with my own eyes three young children crying at the side of a dried-up river after walking 12 miles with their mother to find water. Please open your hearts. This is not only happening in Kenya. Over the past few months, there have been deadly heat waves and wildfires in Algeria and devastating floods in Uganda and Nigeria. And there is more still to come. By 2025, in just 4 years' time, half of the world's population will be facing water scarcity. And by the time I'm 50, the climate crisis will have displaced 86 million people in sub-Saharan Africa alone.
The conference concluded with financing commitments falling short of Africa's request.
The monies that were offered or the monies that were committed are negligible. It's not enough. So the African countries, most of them, pretty much say, look, you industrialized using fossil fuels. Now it's our turn to industrialize, and you're telling us to stop burning fossil fuels. That is not fair. So they are saying pretty much if they don't get the money that was committed at COP26 in a much bigger sum, then this whole COP26 was just a waste of time. It's simply the West telling the African countries to stop burning fuel while themselves they are industrialized, they are developed, but African countries are still developing. So they have a justification to burn, fossil fuels.
Well, that's it for this week's edition of Africa Today, which focused on some of the events that made headlines in Africa in 2021. Unfortunately, our time is up for today. So drop us a line through our social media handle and let us know your opinion on the subjects we covered over the past year. It was great having you. Goodbye for now, and wish you all a happy and prosperous 2022.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz. Every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAG 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Lady Fatima's personality according to Ayatollah Khamenei, February 19th, 2018.
Presently, these days belong to the most superior woman who walked on the earth, the greatest lady throughout history, Lady Fatima alayhi salam. She was an exemplary woman who although lived a short life and departed earth as a young lady, is a role model for all zealous, devout Muslim men and women, and every non-Muslim people who are familiar with her prestigious position. We should follow Fatima's lead. During the life of Fatima, there is one point that we should consider. Here, we will not question the degree of her spiritual position and knowledge. We are not even capable of comprehending the spiritual greatness of Fatima alayhi salam. In fact, at the top of human spirituality and perfection, only God knows and understands the high level of such individuals and others at their level. Thus, Fatima alayhi salam is only known to her husband, her great father Muhammad, peace be upon him, and her pure children.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The people of her time, of other times, and we in this era are not able to recognize the brilliance and splendor of her spirituality. The bright light of spirituality is not detected by everyone's eye. Our short-sighted and weak eyes are unable to see the luminosity of humanity in these great personalities. Therefore, we do not discuss the definition of Fatima's alayhi salam spirituality. However, in her ordinary life, there's an important point. On the one hand, as a Muslim woman, she perfectly performs her duties at home and behaves nicely towards her husband and children. On the other hand, as a zealous, tireless person, she acts for her cause. In political events, shortly after the death of her father, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, she went to the mosque, gave a speech, expressed her position, and defended her cause. Hence, she represented a marvelous fighting personality that is tireless, enduring, and tolerant. The third aspect of her life reveals her as a devotee of Allah, who performs prayers in the dark of the nights, uprises for Allah, and is humble before Allah. And in the worshipping chamber, this young lady worships and speaks to Allah like the old pious people.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
This gathering in Iran's town of Shahrareh is a tribute to a man who's known as the father of national security in Iran.
Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, ahead of the second anniversary of his assassination. Iranian people and senior officials gathered to commemorate him and mourn his loss.
General Soleimani is no longer with us, but his legacy will continue across the generations to come. His assassination is a huge miscalculation on the part of the U.S. He was an influential axis in the region, and his assassination led to the humiliating ouster of American troops from Iraq and then Afghanistan.
General Soleimani was the commander of IRGC's Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He, together with commander of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, was killed in 2020 in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump.
General Soleimani was the spearhead of the fight against terrorism in our region. So by assassinating him, the U.S. sought to dispose of him to allow the terrorists to roam freely in the region to serve the interests of the American government.
By assassinating General Soleimani, the U.S. thought in vain that it will stop his anti-terror activities. But in fact, Soleimani is still alive in the hearts of millions of Iranians who will continue his path stronger than ever.
General Soleimani holds a reputation for dislodging Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also led major operations in Syria that resulted in the recapturing of key areas from Daesh. His efforts made him known as the nemesis of the terrorists in the region. In 2020, millions of people in Iraq and Iran took part in his funeral ceremony to pay tribute to him and bid him farewell.
2 years into the incident, Iranians still mourn the loss of General Soleimani. They say they will not forget his endeavors in the fight against terrorism, something which earned him the title of a national hero and the guarantor of regional security. Yusuf Jalali from the town of Ray.
Iran's lead delegate to the Vienna talks, Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri-Kani, says there's been relatively good progress over the past few days in the negotiations aimed at restoring the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA.
The main focus of the negotiations was sanctions removal. We had several meetings with the EU coordinator and the three European signatories, both on verification and guarantees.
Iran says it will go back to its nuclear commitments only after it verifies the full removal of U.S. sanctions. Tehran has also demanded guarantees that the U.S. will not withdraw from the JCPOA again or impose sanctions that violate the deal. A European source close to the negotiations says all participants agree that verification and assurances have to be reflected in the final document, but that there are still questions on how that is possible. So are these issues going to create major obstacles in the way of a final agreement?
Yes, it's a major problem because these European diplomats know quite well how verification can take place. It's not something strange. If the Iranians cannot use the banking system because behind the scenes the Americans are threatening banks, then that's a violation of the JCPOA.
Russia's lead delegate Mikhail Olyanov said he believed an agreement could be achieved in the first half of February, adding that although the discussions were difficult, there was steady progress.
General impression, business-like atmosphere, positive trends recognized by everybody, by all participants. We need to be patient, persistent in our efforts, and we will overcome all the problems.
Informal consultations are set to continue within the framework of the Vienna talks. The eighth round will resume after a 3-day break for the New Year holidays on Monday. Homa Lizgi, Vienna.
France has broken the European record for corona infections, and nations across Western Europe are also reaching new daily highs as the pandemic has entered a new but seemingly less deadly phase.
The coronavirus right now is exploding right now in France. It's very scary to see. I saw over 200,000 infections in France in 1 day. So I'm nervous. I'm trying to get back to the United States right now, and I'm waiting for a COVID test right now. I'm very nervous. I want to make sure that it's negative so I'm able to get back home.
France currently has over 4 million active cases of corona, but 99.9% of them are classified as mild. Daily deaths are half of what they were a year ago, while shorter quarantines are being approved. Cases are soaring in part because many more people are getting tested prior to holiday gatherings, but France's hospital admissions are just a third of previous peaks. It appears increasingly certain that the new Omicron variant may spread like wildfire, but that it is significantly less lethal, causing many to have a cautious sense of relief.
Corona is mainly just a bad flu. It's only a serious risk for certain types of people. But for the overwhelming majority of people, if you get vaccinated, if you quarantine when you have symptoms, if you use common sense to protect yourself and others, then all will be fine.
The high transmission rate of Omicron does have some taking scientifically questionable steps not seen since the early days of the pandemic. Paris has just made face masks mandatory in all public places, even outdoors. Some nations, which aren't seeing an increase in cases, have banned public holiday festivities anyway. France, Italy, and other countries are debating making their health passes even more restrictive, which many say is an abuse of personal freedom.
France has long been considered the most vaccine-skeptical nation in the world, but measures which amount to either get vaccinated or live in social isolation have coerced 80% of the country into getting vaccinated.
One fact appears vital. In France, the unvaccinated are far more likely to be in intensive care than those who have chosen to be inoculated. What many are hoping for in 2022 is that Omicron truly does herald the end of the lethal phase of Corona 19, which would render moot the controversies and uncertainties over how to best handle the long-running pandemic. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Heavy hits and intense rhythm are immaculately employed to play an epic melody that tries to induce an image of a hero in the minds of listeners, the image of General Qasem Soleimani. This symphony orchestra is performed in commemoration of the second anniversary of the assassination of former commander of IRGC's Quds Force, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani.
Tonight's event was an effort to use the beautiful medium of music to describe the character of a legend who is General Soleimani. Art is a universal language and it can easily connect to different nations.
Qasem Soleimani had many characteristics. To understand those features, we need different media and music can better reflect his epic aspect. The aspect that made him risk his life to make our region a safer place to live. So tonight, artists try to play their part in paying him tribute and admire his great character.
The orchestra was performed by the IRIB Symphony Orchestra, which is affiliated to Iran's national television. The pieces were conducted under the baton of Arash Amini, who believes music speaks stronger than words.
The music pieces that were performed tonight have the capacity to be played in different countries. It's music, and music can be understood by anyone, no matter where they come from. So I think it's the best way to acquaint the world with the personality of General Soleimani.
General Soleimani holds a reputation for the fight against terrorism in the region. He's hailed for dislodging Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. This earned him the title of a national hero in Iran. The country is set to hold nationwide commemoration ceremonies on the second anniversary of his assassination, slated for January 3rd, 2022.
There have been many events in the past days in Iran that tried to highlight the importance of General Soleimani's role in Iran and the region. These tunes try to communicate the same messages, except